Marilyn, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very grateful to be an alcoholic today. That wasn't always the case. So, it's all good. I want to say something ahead of time. This is stretching me. One of my favorite little cartoon characters is Gumby. And so, spiritually, I'm being a Gumby with these presentations. And it's a good thing. It's a very growing thing, so I'm happy for that. Okay. After step one, which I made an attempt to stab at last week, we came to begin to move on beyond admitting powerlessness and unmanageability. It started last week, but now in the steps, because of the steps, we have a we identity. And I needed that. I was such a me, and I was so isolated and into my own self when I first came into the program. So the biggest thing that I want to get across is that there's a lot of different ways to believe. And I come from some persuasions in my past of dogma. And it has to be this way, and you must believe blah, 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 whatever it is. And it didn't help me to feel comfortable with God, and now I do, is the God of my understanding. So I'm not going to talk about the three basic categories that's talked about in the big book, the atheist, the agnostic, and the I call the third category the disillusioned believer. and that was what I was. So that is covered very well in the big book in We Agnostics. And I've been reading that again. I love that chapter. I grew so much spiritually just when I read it. I get some other insight. So I'd encourage you to do that. So, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I got to define that later on. Oh boy, okay. So, came to believe. I'm going to just take chunks of the step, little phrases to start with, and came to believe, of course, is the first one. And I know you've heard this, I came to believe. And that is basically what it is. But what step two is a start or a beginning of changes in our thinking and our beliefs. I changed some of my thinking about alcohol in step one because I was not able to manage my life when I was drinking, or even when I was not drinking. You know, it was getting crazy. So, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came to believe. Defined, what is belief? What does it mean to believe? Well, it's very simple. It's to have confidence in something, to trust, to rely on through faith, to accept something as the truth. And the truth had escaped me a long time ago before I came into the rooms. A quote from what I basically am doing, I'm reading during the week some of the literature. I have a special like for the Joe McHugh steps we took because it spoke to me and it really helped me come alive with my program and with my spirituality. So on page 31, he says, "We don't see the power of believing. We can only see the results of believing." And I really like that. The results of my believing in alcohol was kind of devastating to my life. And the solution could only come if I was willing to be a part of something bigger or beyond myself. And alcohol, I had to change my beliefs about alcohol, about you people, because I was like socially backward. and had very bad communication skills. And also my understanding or my belief about God. In step one, there's a special little mark, a dash. Okay? So after the dash in step one, there's a word that comes. It's that. And I overlooked that until I was studying this week. I'm like, I gotta like think about the word that. Who looks up the word that? I mean, come on, it's silly. But it describes how our powerlessness, that our lives had become unmanageable. So our lives, our powerlessness led us to unmanageability. And that kind of led us down a truth that's very hard to take at first. It was for me. Okay, so step two also has that in it. Came to believe that. But the use of that in step two is a transitional word. And it transitions us into the solution. And the solution is very hopeful. So we're restored to sanity through belief. But I'll get into that a little later. Okay, one of the things that I came into the program with was a lot of impatience. You know, I saw people that had it all together and seemed to be happy, and I want it now. Well, that's not how it works. And so it's a gradual process of coming to believe also. It was for me in my recovery. I could only believe a certain amount of stuff at first. I was limited. My thinking was limited. My coping skills were like not there. So it was hard at first. But over time, and I hope it's still happening, but over time, I started to get just a little bit more sanity going. I like to think that I'm saner than I was a year ago, or even a day ago. So, but that's something that I can pray and meditate about. Okay, believing in a power greater than ourselves gives us the ability to see possibility beyond the limited perspectives and efforts of self-will. I thought I was in control of everything until I've discovered I was in control of nothing. Another quote from Joe McHugh, and this one I had to really think about. I always say that believing is an eternal force, a lighthouse that stays on all the time. There is no way to turn it off. So if we don't use it for ourselves, then we have to use it against ourselves. And I'd much rather use it for myself to benefit, to increase, to grow my relationships with, well, my relationship with myself, my God, and all of you. So believing is the beginning of faith. Better watch the clock here. The 12 and 12 quotes has another quote that I really could relate to. It's on page 31. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. And I was pretty good at the defiant part. My defiance was a lot of dishonesty, lies and alibis, and being ultra, ultra defensive. Because if you came close to, you know, exposing what I was doing, I got kind of testy about that. And then in the 12 and 12 at step 2, again on page 33, it says, true humility and an open mind can lead to faith. And every AA meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves to Him. And I think that that's been quite a journey, and hopefully will continue to be a journey for me. It's also the beginning of acknowledging a realistic sense of ourselves. I had to find a way to see beyond my circumstances and my mistakes, and that was difficult. I don't know about you, but when I came into the program, I had a lot of shame and guilt. There were things I did that I should feel bad about, but that was kind of like I might as well have had a fence up, sort of like keeping myself, protected. And I had to see beyond that. I had to get beyond that. So, okay, a power greater than ourselves. Power, what's power? It's energy. It's strength. It's force. It's authority. It can bring about change, restoration. It can make things function. So power is a good thing. Being powerless is also good. It was good for me because it took me out and away from what I thought was my ability to manage things. I was quite the manager, let me tell you. I had a couple bosses that I did a good job, but they would say such things as, I never know which Marilyn's going to walk through the door. That's kind of, now I feel bad about that, but I don't do that kind of thing anymore. So what are we coming to believe? That a power greater than ourselves, greater than. I always thought, there's these little signs, there's a little arrow that points left, and there's arrow that points right, and it's greater than and less than. I'm such a math genius. Okay, well, greater than myself. I had to get beyond myself. Greater than implies a comparison between two or more things. One is bigger, greater, and the other is lesser and less effective. That would be me. A power greater than. In the big book on, I got to get my water.
We'll have a commercial.
I am promoting this water. Okay. I'm sorry about that. In the big book on page 45, it really sums it all up. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Ourselves. Wow, there's the we again. We're together. We're not alone in this. My powerlessness, my lack of competency in living my life, I share with all of you. And I'm not saying you're incompetent or anything like that, but we all came in a crisis of some sort, whatever it would be. Okay, now, the power of the could. I like words, can you tell? By definition, who defines could? It's like that. Why would you do that? But anyway, by definition, it's used to express possibility or ability. Or it can be used in making an offer of a suggestion or some advice. I suggest, you could do such and such. Sometimes that's not well received. But actually, there's some real power in this step because of that word could. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could, has the ability to restore us to, there's the word of the day, sanity. Step one exposed the insanity that permeated almost every part of our lives. We had a faulty thinker and a faulty doer. And that was running the show. I liked the actor and the director thing in the big book. And you can't run the whole show, but I thought I could. And anyway, because of the nature of alcohol, it's mind and mood altering. So I get in a state where my thinking is already distorted, and I am going to do some pretty insane things. Even my ability to be rational, to just problem solve, started to be affected very gravely. So, restoration, or restore us to sanity. Restoration, I like that word. I used to like to restore old furniture, you know, scrape it down. My father was mean. He made me strip of furniture with a piece of glass. Yeah, and then sand it. It was quite rigorous, but it came out nice, but it was something else. But restoration implies believing in a power greater than ourselves can bring us back to a former or an unimpaired condition, or how we used to be. I like to also add to that, we can be better. And I can now face the world through that restoration process, that restoring, because of faith. I can actually live life on a much better plane. I would like to think that I'm more productive, and have been able to, over the years, heal some very damaged relationships. Okay, so restore us to, there's the word again, sanity. And by definition, it's the ability to think and behave in a normal and rational manner. I was laughing when I was putting this together, because normal and rational, it's like, wow. But simply put, it's having a healthy mind that can make choices, healthy choices, and healthy decisions. And I used to, you know, put off decisions because I had no clue. I didn't know how to make them, or what. I certainly didn't have a good grasp on reality, so some of the decisions I did make were rather scary. Okay, so I can't do, now we're down to higher power. It's the power greater than ourselves we call higher power, and of course that's getting into step three, which I'm not doing. But one of the things about the steps and about this particular step, because it's starting talking about faith and belief, there's no sectarian theologies here, you know, and that I needed. I needed to be broken from that and distanced from it. And it diffuses my defensiveness and also my confusion about power. I was very confused about power greater than ourselves. I always was considering God to be, I was afraid of him, because I was doing a lot of stuff that I knew wouldn't please him. So I saw him as a punishing God. And that's far from what I believe today. So belief happens over time. It's gradual. You got to start somewhere, and I think step two is a great place to start. And these steps kind of build on each other and gradually and lovingly bring us through to step 12. I'll just say it like that. So I've always sought for God. I even as a young child, I remember one Easter we got Bibles underneath our Easter baskets. And so I thought, oh, this is great. So I tried to read it. It's old King James, tiny print. And I would go to my very busy mother and ask her, what does this mean? And I don't know, just go read it. You know? So there wasn't much guidance there. But I came to AA and to sobriety, let's say that, with a boatload of shame and guilt. I really, as I said earlier, I feared God's wrath. And I didn't know enough about the program or to trust. I didn't trust myself, let alone you or God, but there was something that kept bringing me back here. And I think that in and of itself was God's leading, my higher powers leading. Over time, and this is a thing to hope for if you're new in the program, over time, by just coming back, exposure to hearing people's stories, to hear people's faith journey and belief journey, I think it's a powerful way to learn. And then working with a sponsor and just getting involved in service. And I feel that over the years, my service is limited in some ways. But I try to show up and suit up and show up, as they say, in those circumstances. So what I'd like to do now is I've had a really interesting happening in my life. You're going to know how crazy I am when I tell you this. But I'm going to tell you a story of coming to trust. And it kind of parallels my story of learning to trust a higher power, God as I understand him. But it's about a cat. So I'm not a real cat lover. I got to tell you that right from the start. They're arrogant. They're everything I was, you know, and them sometimes, but defiant. You call kitty kitty, and there's a cat delay. Do you ever notice that about cats? They just like stall. I'll just wait, and then I'll come, and that's what they do. Well, we have a cat. His name is Buddy, and he's a great cat. He's a Japanese bobtail, so his tail's this long. Mm-hmm. He's cool. He's the inside cat. But outside, we live on outside of Sagertown on the highway on 19, and people have a propensity for dropping cats off because they see houses there, and they're getting rid of their cats. So I can't watch a cat starve. I can't watch any animal starve. So this is the one I'm telling you about is cat number 3. I tamed down his mother and a cat before that was a stray and very, very frightened. But so this is the story of Munch. And the reason I named him that is he was very starving. You could see when he walked, you could see all the bones in his ribs. And it was just, to me, it was disgusting. And I just cursed the people that do those things. But anyway, we bought cat food, and I put a little station out by our garden shed. And right away he came and he ate. But if I came outside, he'd run. You just couldn't be in the yard when he was there. And I thought, well, I'm going to tame this guy down. I'm going to make him trust me. Talk about power. So what happened was I kept moving the dish. I put it in a little shelter, and I kept moving it closer and closer to our back porch, or front porch, I guess we call it. And so over time, he came right up on the porch. And I would go out, as I'm doing this, I'd go out and I'd stand there. First he'd run, and then he'd go, oh, she's going to stand there. So he'd just let me. And then once he was on the porch, I could look at him out the window, talk to him out the door, and so on. And he'd turn around. He was very suspicious. He'd turn around, look, and then go back to eating. So this has been going on since September. One of the things that I had to learn about my recovery was patience, that I can't have things all at once. So Munch has taught me a lot. So from September until the middle of March, maybe it was more toward the end of March, I would go out, and I started sitting way back on the porch, and he'd be eating. I move forward until I'm like right there, right next to him. And I'd reach out and I'd try to touch him, and it was like I was hitting him with a hot poker. You know, he was so frightened, he'd run off and go under the porch. And I had that hot poker sensation when I came into the program. And anyway, to make a very long story, because it's been since September, short, toward the end of March, I put my hand on his back and he let me. And yesterday, the sun was out in the morning, it was beautiful. I came out and I sat down on the step. And Munch came over and he sat next to me, purring. He's a little scary because he's strong and he headbutts. And I said, "You got to learn some social skills, boy." He really does. But anyway, the parallels to my recovery are so strong there. He had to develop faith in me, develop the understanding that I was not there to hurt him. And I had to understand that you people were not there to hurt me. I did enough of that. You weren't there to hurt me. You were there to help me and to share your experience, strength, and hope. So I'm not going to belabor this story too much longer, but I will tell you this. Buzz, he's watching this from the inside. Well, he'd like to pet the cat too. So I said, "You know, just move slow." Well, that didn't work well at first. Buzz moving slow, you know. But actually, I think it was yesterday, was it? Yesterday, he went out, sat on the porch, and petted Munch. So now he's got two people. He's got two peeps, and he's very comfortable. And he now trusts. It's taken me longer than the cat. But we get there on God's timing. And I like to think that I'm still on that journey of believing. I don't want to stop believing. I want to believe more. And one of the things I do in my quiet time in the morning is pray for, "I want more of you, God. I want to know more of you." And it's amazing how that happens. It happens through readings. It happens through experiences with silly cats named Munch. But it happens if we give it the time and space to happen. So I think I'll close with that. But I have a prayer. There's prayers all throughout the big book, but I couldn't find one for step two. So if you find one in the big book, let me know. But I found one through, I think it's the AA organization in Cleveland, and also Toledo had it. But it's a prayer, and I'd like to end my little talk with that, this prayer. "Higher power, I know in my heart that only you can restore me to sanity. I humbly ask that you remove all twisted thought and addictive behavior from me this day. Heal my spirit and restore in me a clear mind. Thank you."
Thank you, Marilyn. It is now time for questions and answers. Anybody in the room with a question, raise your hand. All right.
Thank you so much. I love your cat story. I'm Brent, I'm an alcoholic. From the time I heard about step two, I could never figure out how you can restore somebody to something they never had. Like, how do you get restored to sanity if you don't even, never had it? And I really wonder if my sanity was never right from the time I was born, or long before I ever picked up anything. I never could get what sanity meant, and I just wondered if you had experiences where you struggled with that definition of those words in your program.
Well, the thing that I think was, that's a very good point. The thing that I would relate to there is, from a young child, I didn't have a good grip on reality, coping. I grew up in kind of a rough home where, you know, we weren't nurtured in the sense of being taught how to function. My way of functioning was hiding, just stepping back and not being in the mix. So, you know, I had this wonderful pine tree I used to sit under as a kid. But you can define, I think we come into this world innocent kids, children that just want to be loved. But things happen, and there are things that I know I have been, I have had struggles with depression from the time I was probably about 5. So is that insanity? Maybe. I think that being restored to sanity for some of us, and for me, is basically figuring out what it is to be sane, what that looks like and feels like, because I really didn't know. I just winged it, I guess, and that didn't work out so well. I hope that answered the question.
If I'm chairing a meeting, I always have in my mind, I don't know, either at the forefront or somewhere in my mind, about newcomers and the steps. And in the big book, it, you know, I came to believe in a power greater than yourself, and it mentions in the big book that some of us that maybe were even atheists or agnostics, you know, now have a belief in a relationship with God. So if there's a person or whether it's a couple people or a person that feels the need to state, and I don't care what people, I mean, you can be an atheist and be an AA, I know that. Mm-hmm. But when someone feels like they have to, you know, I don't know if it's get on their soapbox or whatever, and just say very strongly that you don't need to have a belief in God to be successfully sober. And I know that's true, but I worry about the newcomer. Maybe there's nothing that I should do, or if there's anything I could say. I don't know. I feel a responsibility there, and I don't know what to do. I wondered if what you would do in a situation like that.
Well, I think a lot of times when people come into the program, and I've heard this in many leads, the program itself, the meeting, the people in the rooms, that's our higher power first. It came in with a lot of identity crisis when it came to faith and belief. And what I wanted to do is just discard everything from the past. And I found out later that's not necessary. But I think it's important. I mean, somebody said one time their higher power was a chair or this or that. It's like, as long as you have faith in that chair, it's going to hold you up. Good, go for it. I have no problem with that. So, but I think that, you know, like we present the steps in meetings, but when you see somebody struggling, That's what the one-on-one after the meeting's for, going out for coffee or whatever, or a phone call to help them to sort of navigate through that minefield of that. It's a crisis of faith, a crisis of belief, because I'm changing. I'm no longer putting all my trust in alcohol or in these behaviors or whatever it is. So I don't know if that.
Thank you, Marilyn. I'm not crazy about cats either, but I think I like much. Nice story. And that is how we come about to trust, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Just very slowly, just taking baby steps and see what happens. It has to be built up. It has to be deserved. And, you know, I tell new people in the program all the time, there's no reason why you have to trust anyone. You know, trust has to be built, and it really has to be earned.
Yes.
And if someone is not doing what they're saying they're doing, then, you know, just stay away from them. But for me, step two, the insanity that I felt was, I felt for a very long time very different than many in the rooms, because I had this belief that I willfully and that I purposely became an alcoholic. And I couldn't get away from that untruth. And I felt like I was undeserving. And I felt like I was bad. And I felt like I should have been locked up, you know. And so going from that point of view and that reality and that mistruth into a more healthy kind of attitude or perspective, and knowing that rather than being a bad person, I was a sick person, you know, was quite troublesome for me. It took me a long time. I was wondering how you navigated that concept.
Well, I came in with a very similar sense that I knew better, but I did what I wanted to do, or I just did what I did. And that's what I think I mentioned, the guilt and shame and the unworthiness is definitely there. And I felt like I was just not, I'll never measure up is one of the things that I came in with. And I'll never be able to be so helpful to other people and that kind of thing, is that unworthiness again. And I think that just the working the program and the steps and navigating through them is a powerful way to receive forgiveness, both of it from yourself and from your God of your understanding. And it's certainly a process, not an event, and it does. It took me a long time. This is a terrible admission, but because of some of that sense that I had, I didn't lead until I was 5 years sober. And I hadn't really worked through the steps until 5 years sober. So, you know, we all come in and it all, everybody's journey is a little bit different. It doesn't invalidate anybody's journey, and the neat thing is that we learn from everybody's journey, and you know, the mistakes and wins and you know, victories. So
thank you, Darren. Mm-hmm. Anybody on Zoom? If you have a question, go ahead, unmute yourself. Fire away. If not, I'm going to hand it off to Dan here.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Thank you, Marilyn. Mm-hmm. This is really good. I really enjoy the way you presented this tonight. You made a statement about true humility and an open mind can lead to faith. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting when you look at the spiritual experience appendix in the big book, you know, mm-hmm. talks in there about how most of us acquire a belief or faith over time that we don't. I mean, I always wanted to have that white light experience that Bill talked about. Yeah. And I've wanted that my whole life. I mean, I've been a person of a desire to have faith. You know, I was, as a young boy, I was raised in a Catholic home, became an altar boy, and, you know, and then later on I went to dozens of different Protestant churches. Like you, I felt relieved when I got here and found out that I didn't have to ascribe to a statement of faith or a doctrinal statement right. to understand this stuff, that I could have a higher power of my own choosing, my own belief. I think that's the wonder and the power of this program too, is that we don't have to have a particular denomination or faith to do that. It's a process, and what I tell the guys that I work with is try not to let that bother you right now, but just go through the process. Mm-hmm. Look around you. I mean, one thing that has been good for me is I've been able to acquire other people's faith when mine wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. When I didn't have enough faith, I could look at another person that I respect in the program. I could listen to their experience, and I could have confidence based on the fact that their experience proved to them that there was a power greater than themselves that restored them to sanity. So I could think to myself, then maybe that could happen for me. Just like when I came in the door and thought, there's a guy with 30 days of sobriety. I couldn't put 3 days together. And then I see a guy with 30 days. Well, maybe I could as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful statement. I love that. And I do think that that's all it requires, is some humility and a little bit of an open mind to do that, you know. And I love you cats, sir. And I am a cat guy. I got a cat at home, but we have a cat, similar circumstances. It's taken us, we've had her for 4 years now, and it's taken us a long time to get her to trust us. And it's interesting when you know, I never thought of comparing that relationship with my relationship with God either, but that's a new thing for me. Thank you.
Dan will work on turning that into a question by next week.
Well, I have a comment to it, though, if I may. One of the things, I think I've probably left it out, it's probably in the notes somewhere, but I believe in a creator, a God is the creator of the universe. Universes, maybe. I mean, we tend to be very limited in our perspective sometimes, but I believe because of AA and because of what I've learned through this faith journey, through the steps and so on, that our relationship with God, everyone is very personal. And it's going to have a little bit different shape and form than the next person. And by golly, why do we have to always fit everybody into this little box? And it's like, believe this, and then you know. No. God's got this. I don't need to make those rules up. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Madeline. Renee, alcoholic. I found that since coming in that my concept of a higher power is ever changing and constantly moving, and, you know, one day it could be something totally different. Have you found that for yourself, your higher power is always in transition for you?
Oh, yes, definitely. I love that. Because it's, I like the word journey. I like to hike, and I like to just travel by foot. I don't have cars now. But, a journey, there's always more to learn. And I think my God gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more enveloping. And I feel more loved as I work this program. So.
Hey, Eric, alcoholic. I like how you, it made me feel good that you said it took you a long time to kind of develop that relationship. I'm kind of wet behind the ears, full disclosure, with this whole thing. And my question for you is, as I'm trying to understand God and actually pray to Him, when you started that prayer journey, did you do a lot of just like thinking and coming up with things, or did you go more by like book prayers to kind of develop that relationship? Because I sometimes like blank out and I'll like think about what I'm doing the rest of the day in the middle of it, so I'm like having trouble with like that connection and staying focused like in that moment.
I think that it's eclectic. I think you have to use a lot of different approaches. I can't sing. I can't hold a tune very well in a paper bag, even. But anyway, when I was working, I'm gratefully and just love retirement. But when I was working, I always, because of the type of work I was doing, I always felt the need to really surrender and be at peace when I entered the door so that I could function not in my own power, you know. And so it was a combination of starting my day with prayer and readings. And whether it be a reading from the big book or any of the devotionals that go along or some spiritual readings. But when I got in my car, I sang. And there were a few little choruses that I would sing because nobody could hear me but God. And He understands because He gave me this voice. So, but it says somewhere in the Bible, make a joyful noise to the Lord. So that's what I would do. But you know, it's so human of us to try to well, I need to do it this way, and you don't. Just be still, and you'll know. Because I do believe that the Spirit of God or the Spirit within that dwells us will actually lead you here, and it'll lead you into a stronger connection with your higher power, I'm sure. Thanks for sharing that. That's great.
Nobody on Zoom? No questions? No questions tonight, Helen? Nope. All right. Kevin?
Nope, I'm done.
Nothing? Hey. All right, Marilyn, thank you so much.